announce that. Let's go. We need an audience.
I don't know if you want this at the...
No.
Well, we're just going to see you, so...
I don't know.
Everyone can sit here, no problem.
All right, Baruch Hashem, B'siyata D'Shmaya, today's Maseches Megillah Daf Yutet. Are you kidding me?
Now we're recording.
Okay, Baruch Hashem, B'siyata D'Shmaya, today's Megillah Daf Yutet. I'm a Dalaf, we left off in Megillah Daf Yutet, on a base, by the last line of the narrow line, Hayakoysva Dorisha Umagia, the Mishnah says that if a person was writing a Megillah, was expounding a Megillah, was fixing a Megillah, im kiven libay, if while he was doing that he had kavana, and as we said when we were learning the Mishnah, depending on if mitzvahs need kavana or not, accordingly will be the meaning of the words of the Mishnah, im kiven libay. But there has to be some type of additional kavana, aside of the kavana of writing, explaining, or fixing. So if there was kavana for the Megillah, then the person fulfilled his obligation. Ask the Gemara, Hechi Dami, what would be the case of the Mishnah where the person is writing a Megillah? Either Kamasadr Psuka Psuka of a Kosov Lom. If we're speaking about a person who looked at took a Pasuk, said a Pasuk, and wrote it down one Pasuk at a time, which would mean that until the person finished writing the whole Megillah, until then the Megillah was incomplete. If kiven libay may have, what would it help for the person to have kavana? He says, al pehu. He's reading the Megillah by heart. Well, if he's saying every word, then they go back to the beginning. That's going to be a problem over here. All right, take two.
Fresh start.
All right, Baruch Hashem, B'siyata D'Shmaya, today's Megillah Daf Yutet Amud Aleph, we left off of Megillah Daf Yutet Amud Beis. By the last narrow line, Hayakoysva Darsho Magia, if a person was writing, expounding, or correcting a Megillah in Kivan Liba, if the person had Kavana, according to the way we explained it 2 days ago, whatever Kavana means, if there's additional Kavana, Yotza, then the person fulfilled his obligation. Ask the Gemara Hechi Dami, what would be the case of the Mishnah? Either Komasadu Psuka Psuka, if the person is saying a pasuk by heart and then writing it down. Don't forget, a Megillah has to be read from a written Megillah. You cannot read it by heart. So if he's saying it by heart and then writing it down, so as the Gemara says, is kikiven li by mayhava. What does it help for the person to have kavana? Al pehu. He said it by heart. Elo the kasuk pasuka pasuka v'karilei. So it must be that first he wrote it, and after he wrote it, he said it from his writing. So he's reading it from the inside. Umiyata. How would he be able to fulfill his obligation? That halacha kidivri ha'emer kula. We are going to learn Emir Hashem today in the Mishnah Machlekes between Tanoim. How much of the Megillah do you have to read? It's very interesting. You see, there's a Megillah. The Megillah begins from by Hibimei Achashverosh, and it goes until the end of the Megillah, till the end of Perek Yud. But there are opinions that are held that if you have a kosher Megillah, when you read it, you don't need to read the whole thing. And even if we're going to say that you have to read the whole thing, and even according to the version that holds, you can start reading it from Ish Yehudi, nevertheless, Tzricha Shetehei Ksuva Kula, you have to read it from a Megillah that's written in its entirety. So if you're writing a verse and reading it by heart, when you read that pasuk, the Megillah only had one pasuk. When you wrote the second verse and read the second verse, the Megillah only had two psukim. So that should not be good. Elot must be the mancha Megillah kamei, that there was another Megillah in front of him, and v'kari la mino psuka psuka, and you were reading from your original Megillah one verse at a time. You read it verbally, and then v'kasav la, and you wrote your new Megillah. And that's the case of the Mishnah, that if kivoin liboy, if when you were doing that, you had intent, let's say that mitzvahs need kavana, so you had intent to be mekayim, the mitzvah of Kriyas Megillah, then you were yoytza. Which would mean that how are you writing a Megillah from another Megillah? Says the Gemara, Leiman is Ayelei, this seemingly would be a proof to the opinion of Rabba Bar Bar Chana, to Amar Rabba Bar Bar Chana in the name of Rabbi Yechanan, and also Lichtev Ois Acha, Shaleiman Aksav, that you're not allowed to write any single word from the whole Tanakh. from your memory, you need to write it from a priorly written Chumash, Nevi'im, or Ksuvim.
Same thing with the Torah.
Which is the way they write a Sefer Torah today. That you have to have an original Sefer, read from an original Sefer, and then write it down. And that would be the case of the Mishnah. In other words, why is the Mishnah speaking about such a case? Because you need to be speaking about, you need such a case. You need to have a prior Megillah, so you are reading it from a fully written kosher Megillah. Says the Gemara Dilma, the Isramile Isramuye, that the Mishnah, you cannot prove that you need to write a Megillah from a prior written Megillah. It could be this was the case of the Mishnah, but it doesn't need to be that way. There's no proof from our Mishnah, but that it is indeed the case of the Mishnah. Gufa, we learned, Amar Abba Bar Bachan, Om Rabbi Yechanan, also, Lichtiv, Eitach, HaShulei, Men Aksav, you're not allowed to write a single word of Tanakh if it's not from a written prior document. You have to read it from a written one and then write it down. Ask the Gemara Mesa, we learned, Amar Ashba, Maisa, Berab Meir, that it happened once with Rabbi Meir, that he went to a country called Asia. Asia is one of the three nations that we will conquer with the coming of Mashiach. That's what the Gemara says in Baba Basra. And Rav Meir once went to Asia. In other words, it's Keni, Kini, and Kadmoni are the three additional nations to the seven nations that we conquered in the times of Yeshua. And Rav Meir went to one of those countries to make the year into a leap year. You need to have a Beis Din making the year into a leap year. Normally that is done in Eretz Yisrael. Normally that could only be done in a Beis Din in Israel. But when the greatest sage of Israel, in the days of Rabbi Meir, it was Rav Meir. If they left Israel, if he left Israel, and there is no one as great as him in Israel, then he has the power to make the year a leap year where he is, even if he's out of Israel. Why did he leave Israel? Evidently, there was some type of danger factor in making the Jewish calendar because of the Roman government of that time were not allowing us to establish a calendar. And we have similarly a Rabbi Akiva that once traveled, but Rav Meir in any event went to Asia. And the Lehoyesha Megillah, and there was no Megillah. So it says there, Vekosva Melivoy Rabbi Meir wrote the Megillah from his memory, and then he read it. So this goes against the statement of Rabba Bar Bar Chana in the name of Rabbi Yechanan that you're not allowed to write any of the Tanakh from your memory. It has to be copied from a priorly written document, book, Sefer. Amar Rabba Bohu, Shani Rabbi Meir, Rabbi Meir is different. The Mekayim Bey, because he fulfilled the Pasuk of Mishlei, Fa'afa Pecha, that your eyes, Yashiru, Negdecha, are looking straight in front of you. What does it mean your eyes are looking straight in front of you? That implies that Rav Meir had such a tremendous memory that when he was remembering any word of the whole Tanakh, it was as if he was looking at it. That's like a photographic memory. That means this refers to the words of Torah. Regarding Torah, Torah is the light of our eyes. The Chassid Bahu says on Torah, "His aif a nechaboy," that if you close your eyes from it, the einenu, you will right away forget it. In other words, that's your chesam advice. Most people cannot remember the whole Torah unless they constantly learn it. So normally, if you close your eyes from it in one instance, you'll start forgetting it. Rabbi Meir never closed his eyes from Torah. That's what type of memory he had. So therefore, that Rafilo Haki nevertheless me Yisharim Hinetzleitz Rav Meir, but by Rav Meir it was always in front of him. So Rav Meir can be an exception that he is allowed to write a Sefer Torah, Nevi'im, or Ksuvim from his memory because it was as if he was reading from inside the book. That was from a Malach. Well, a Malach was telling him what to write. That's different. It wasn't Baal Peh. He was writing the words of an angel. He's speaking about the Sefer Torah that was written by the Maharam of Rothenburg. And there was no option. And let's go on. Rab Chizda Ashkechim Rab Chananel, the Habakkuk of Svarim Shleim and Aksav, that Rab Chizda once found Rab Chananel that was writing a Sefer or a book of Nevi'im or Ksuvim, not from a priorly written book, Amalei. So he told him the following. That really you are such a master in the Torah that you can write it all. Now, Akach, Omru Chachamim, the sages taught us, Asur Lichtoi Veisach HaShulei Menektav, you're not allowed to write a single letter, not from a written sefer. So, Mi, the Ka'amar, Kolotei, Rekula, Ru'i, Yishit, Yikosin, Alpicha. So the Gemara says, in other words, the fact that Rab Chizda told Rab Chananel that you theoretically would have been able to write the whole Torah, Mechlal, that implies, the Miyusharim Etzloi, Hein Etzloi, that means that Rab Chananel knew it by heart, and still he told him not to write it from the memory. So that contradicts the answer that if you have like this type of photographic memory, you are allowed to write it. Ba'al Peh answers the Gemara that Rav Meir wrote it Shas Hadchak Shani because there was no option. In other words, he was an Asya. He needed to be there. It was Purim. He needed to fulfill the mitzvah of reading the Megillah. What option did he have? So only a person like Rabbi Meir, who knew the whole Torah by heart, he was allowed to write it by Alpen. Abaya Shari Lidabay Bar Chavoy Lemichtav Tfilin Umezuzay Shalem and Eksav. That Abaya allowed, describes who were merchants in Tfilin, people who lived in Chavoy, that they should write Tfilin or Mezuzahs not from a priorly written sefer. No, they can write it from their memory. That's the Gemara Kaman. And Abaya was based that ruling on whom? Kihai Tana de Tanya. Rabbi Yirmiya Omer Mishum Rabbeinu. That Rabbi Yirmiya says in the name of Rabbeinu that Tfilin and Mezuzahs Nechtav Shleim and Aksav, that Tfilin and Mezuzahs A, don't have to be written from a book, and B, they don't need to have Sirtut, they don't have to have those engraved lines that need to be in a Sefer Torah. There are many halachas l'moshe Mesinai regarding the writing of a Sefer Torah. One of them is that they need to have sirtut, and that doesn't go in tefillin and mezuzahs. And the hilchasa, tefillin ain't tzirichim sirtut, that tefillin don't need to have those lines. Mezuzahs, tzirichim sirtut, and idi v'idi, and both of them, nechtav v'shalem and nechtav, could be written from the memory. And why did they allow that? Because my tama migris grisim, because everyone knows them with tremendous fluency. So this is, so to say, a backup. This is like a proof to the concept of a person like Rabbi Meir, who had a photographic memory. For him, the whole Torah was like for us, Shema Yisrael. It was like for us writing a mezuzah. And just like we see that later on, the same idea that tefillin and mezuzahs might be allowed to be written according to certain opinions, Shalei Ben Aksav, the same thing can go, B'shas Adchak, for someone like Rabbi Meir. Just to know something interesting, that there are certain times in halacha that writing is like talking. Ksiva kikriya. You have this idea in halacha, according to some opinions, when it comes to counting of the omer. That if a person did not verbally count the omer, but if you wrote every day, hayoyim yoyim echad, right, etc., that you fulfilled your obligation. So people ask, why is it that by Megillah, the whole Mishnah, that there has to be a reading, and there has to be a kavana? Why do you have to read it all together? Why can it not be that just the act of writing the whole Megillah on the day of Purim, why can that not be like the mitzvah of reading the Megillah? It's kriya, it's ksiva kikriya. And the answer that you're right, in most areas, writing is like talking. But when it comes to the Megillah, there's a special din of reading the Megillah. For example, you can't read it by heart. The very fact that you can't read a Megillah by heart proves that the mitzvah of reading the Megillah isn't just about reading it. You have to read it from a Megillah. So that idea will not work with simply writing the Megillah itself. So the Gemara, Hoyse Ksuva Besam, the Mishnah gave... Yes. Hoyse Ksuva Besam, if a person wrote it with different types of ink, it will not be kosher. It has to be written with the ink, with the black ink that we use today to write a Sefer Torah, Tefillin and Mezuzahs, that on one hand is a good ink, black good ink, on the other hand, it's erasable. So if someone makes a mistake, it could be corrected. So the Mishnah says if a person used sam, so Rashi teaches sam is some type of ink that's called urpumintu. If a person used sikra, amaraba barbarchana, sikra is sikrasa, some type of red paint that people used to paint their shutters with, explains Rashi. Kumus in Aramaic is kaima. This is another type of ink that's not kosher. Turning to the page that you test, Kan kantoin means charto. Charto di ush chofe diftera, the type of black dye that shoemakers use to paint the shoes black. The problem with that is that it's so strong that it's unerasable, and you have to write the Megillah with a erasable ink. I'm sorry, charta di ushchaf ink. Then the Mishnah spoke about diftera, that if you wrote it on diftera, diftera is a semi-finished parchment. What does semi-finished mean? How do you make parchment? You take the hide of an animal, and you have to first salt it, then you have to soak it in flour and water, and then you put it into some type of gallnut juice. So a diftera is a parchment that only went through part of the process. The moliach, that you already salted it. The komiach, you already put flour on it. But the leofitz, but you did not put it in the gallnut. That is not kosher. It's not a proper parchment. And nayar is machka. Nayar is a piece of paper. That's not kosher. Achetehei, it has to be written in ksav ashuris. It has to be written, the Mishnah says, in the real Lashon Kodesh. And how do we know that? We learned that before, because it says, kichsavam uchizmanam, the way they wrote it, the way they wrote it, meaning the way Yidden wrote it then, which is in Lashon Kodesh, and al ha-sefer ubidiyoi, on a parchment, and with ink, minola, and how do we know that it has to be written the way a sefer Torah is written? Because we make a gzeira shava from the words ksiv ksiva. Ksiv hach, it says over here, vatikosev Esther Hamalka, that Esther Hamalka wrote, the ksiv hasan, and it says, regarding Yirmiyah, telling his scribe, a Jew by the name of Baruch, to write down the prophecies of Yirmiyah. So it says, "Vayirmiyah lehem Baruch, mipiv yikare ilai, eskol adavarama ilam," that Baruch needed to hear every word from Yirmiyah, va'ani koisev, and I, Baruch, wrote it down, al ha-sefer badiyoy, and I wrote it on a sefer, meaning not on diftera, but on a kosher parchment, vidiyoy, meaning with the ink that we used to write a sefer Torah. So you have a gzeira shava, ksiva, ksiva. Now, just an interesting point, just to point out, when it says, vatikosev Esther Hamalka, did Esther write a Megillah? Or in other words, can a woman write a Megillah today? So when it comes to a Sefer Torah, a woman cannot write a Megillah, because since she doesn't have the obligation of learning Torah, she has no chiyuv, so she cannot write it. No. She has no chiyuv, and that's why she can't write it. When it comes to the Megillah woman, I'm mechuyav to read the Megillah, I'm mechuyav to hear the Megillah. No, you can't. No. That's correct. And even if she's not a shliach, a woman cannot be a sefer. One of the big good fortunes that we have in the meanwhile is that we don't have women scribes in the world today for us to have that concern, which is a good thing. But when it comes to a Megillah, many people can argue that since women are mechuyev to hear the Megillah, maybe they'll have the power to write it down. And the answer is that that's not the case. That most places can say that a woman cannot write it down. And just speaking about, you can only do it if you have the obligation. I spoke about this a few times regarding Tzipora. A woman cannot be a moyel. People say, it says in the Torah that Tzipora took the tzoyer, she took the stone and she made a bris milah on Eliezer. It did not mean, dear, that she did it. Clearly. It means that she was the one that oversaw and made certain that Eliezer would have a circumcision because of the snake that was swallowing her husband, Moshe Rabbeinu. So just like by Bris, when it says... Doesn't matter. No, because the chiyuv of doing a Bris Milah, one of the few mitzvahs, was given to Avraham Avinu. And even though that we do it today because God recommanded us on Mount Sinai, but there was a chiyuv, there was an obligation of the Bris Milah before, and that obligation cannot be fulfilled with a woman. A woman cannot be a moel. And when the Torah says that she did it, it doesn't mean that she did it. It means that she was the one responsible for someone doing it. So when it says here, "Vatikosev Esther Amalka," it doesn't mean that Esther wrote the Megillah. It means that she was responsible for the Megillah being written. Moving on to the Mishnah. We learned before the following, that there are different places that according to where you live, accordingly you will have the obligation to hear the Megillah. So we learned about a difference between a person living in a ir versus a krach, and an unwalled city, which is called an ir, versus living in a walled city called a krach. If you lived in an unwalled city, the Megillah has to be read on the 14th, both at the night of and the day of the 14th. If you live in a krach, the obligation to hear the Megillah goes on the 15th, and then we learned about the villagers to whom the Chachamim allowed them to anticipate the reading of the Megillah into the Monday or the Thursday before the 14th, which is how the whole Masechta began, that there will all be times that if, for example, Purim falls on a Sunday, so Thursday before Sunday is the 11th of Adar, and they can fulfill the obligation there as well. Now the Mishnah speaks about a very simple question, and that is what happens if a person who lives in an unwalled city finds himself in a walled city on Purim. Let's use examples, let's say Yerushalayim and Kfar Chabad. So Yerushalayim is a walled city, and as we learned before, walled from the days of Yehoshua ben Nun, that is what counts. If a person who lives in Yerushalayim happens to be in Kfar Chabad on the 14th, is he or she obligated to hear the Megillah on the 14th because they are there in an unwalled city? Or do we say, no, since they are residents of Yerushalayim, they're only obligated to hear it on the 15th when they go back to Yerushalayim? So it says the Mishnah, Ben Ir Shalach Likrach, Ben Krach Shalach Le'ir, if a member of one walled city or unwalled city went to another type of city, so this is the criterion. If they plan to go back to their place, and I'll say already by heart how the Gemara explains the Mishnah. But don't compare this to a person of Chutz La'aretz that's going to Israel for Pesach, one day Yontif, two day Yontif, it doesn't work with the same rule. Here it works based on the following. Let's give an example of a person who lives in Yerushalayim, went to Kfar Chabad. And they are there on the night of the 14th. The question is, do you plan to be there into the morning of the 14th? Do you plan to be there into the crack of dawn, into Alois HaShachar of the 14th? If that is the case, then you have to read it on the 14th. If you are planning to go back to Yerushalayim, and you're going to be in Yerushalayim in the morning of the 14th, then you do not read it on the night prior. You do not need to read it when they're reading it in Kfar Chabad, because you live in Yerushalayim and you plan to be back in Yerushalayim on the day of Purim itself, on the 14th itself. If you intend to go back to your place for the beginning of the day, then you only have to read it like the example we gave in Yerushalayim on the 15th. Excuse me. But the imla, but if you are, let's say, in Kfar Chabad, and you plan to stay there for the morning of Purim in Kfar Chabad, means not only are you there in the night prior, the night of, but you're going to be there into the crack of dawn, you're going to be there into the morning, then you have to read it with them. Now the Mishnah begins with a new question. Where do you read the Megillah? Somewhere. Again, to clarify, there is the mitzvah of reading the Megillah from a Megillah. The Megillah is a sefer from Tanakh. We all know that in the Chavdal of Tifrei Kodesh, the Megillah begins with the words Vayhi b'mei Achashverosh. If a person were to have a Megillah that's not fully written, of course you cannot fulfill your obligation from it, like we learned before. However, if the Megillah is written in its entirety, there's a din of reading the Megillah from a kosher Megillah. The din of reading the Megillah doesn't have to begin from the beginning. There's a machlokes between Tanoim. We're going to learn there are really four opinions. From where do you have to read it? Rabbi Meir holds the whole thing from Vayhi B'mei Achashverosh, and that's the halacha. Rabbi Yehuda holds you only start reading it from the word Ish Yehudi. Rabbi Yehuda holds you read it from Achar Hadvarim Ha'ila, from the beginning of the third chapter, which is the beginning of the rise of Haman, who made the decree to God forbid do what he intended to do. Three places. It's the fourth one later in the Gemara. Not only the least amount, but the chatchila, according to Rabbi Yehuda, you can start from Ish Yehudi. Start reading from Ish Yehudi. Rabbi Yehuda holds that the Megillah has to start from Vayihi B'mei Achashverosh, the written Megillah. But you can start reading it from Ish Yehudi. The chatchila. We just don't pass on. Like him says the Gemara. Omar Rava, Rava explains the meaning when the Mishnah says, when does he plan to return? The Mishnah didn't say when. So Rava clarifies the way we explain the Mishnah. When can a resident of Yerushalayim, let's say, when can he read it only on the 15th? When does he or she not need to hear it on the 14th? When they plan to return before the morning of the 14th. They're going back to Yerushalayim still at night. But if they don't plan to go back by night, in other words, by the crack of dawn, by the morning of Purim, they will still be in an unwalled city. in Kairima, and they have to read it in the unwalled city. Amar Rava, Mino Aminala, how do I know that this is the meaning of the Mishnah? And how does the Mishnah know this din? And this does not go consistently with other dinim and tzedim. You know, you have a dinim and tzedim, let's say, regarding a mezuzah. When you move into a house, when are you considered a resident of the house? Mechutz la'aretz, only after 30 days. There are dinim of you having to participate in local tzedakah. You have to help the poor people of your city. When is your city? Not when you moved in there for a few hours. Sometimes you have to live there for 1 year. Like, why is it that when it comes to the mitzvah of reading the Megillah, the definition of which city do you belong to has nothing to do with where you live, really. It has to do where do you plan to be the morning of Purim? Where do we get it from? We get it from the following words. It says in the Megillah, Alkin HaYehudim HaPrazim, that the Jews that live in an unruled city, and there's a repetition, that says, HaYoshvim Be'ari HaPrazim, that find themselves in unruled cities. Jews from an unwalled city that are in an unwalled city. What does that imply? That you can be from a city that's unwalled, but if you are in a walled city for Purim, you will be obligated like the people of the walled city. Right? That's the double expression. Michti, behold, asking a mother, if I use a maprazim. The pasuk is speaking about Jews who lived in unwalled cities. So lamalei lemichtav hayoshim ba'ari haprazim. So why does the Pasuk and Megillah have to repeat that are in unwalled cities? Kamash Malan, from here you see the Parus ben Yoimai, Nikre ben Parus. That if you are only for the day of Purim in an unwalled city, you are obligated in keeping the mitzvahs like any other member of a unwalled city. Askech and Parus Mukaf Minolan. How do we know that it goes both ways? Maybe this only goes for the unwalled city. So the Gemara says, Farahu, that me, the Paros, Ben Yoyim, Karu Paros, Mukav, Ben Yoyim, Karu Mukav. That if a person who lives in Yerushalayim, if he goes to a Arei HaPrazim, if he's there, he's considered for Purim like a member of a unwalled city. So it should also go the opposite way. That if a person of Kfar Chabad goes to Yerushalayim, and he's there in Yerushalayim, and he plans to be there in Yerushalayim, then he has a din of a member of Yerushalayim. So Amar Rava says, Rava Ben Kfar. What about a villager? I just mentioned that it's a whole different rule. It's all different rules. Here it has to do, where do you plant, let's say, this example. You live in Yerushalmi, you went to Kfar Chabad. So the 14th. You are there when they're reading the Megillah. Do you have to hear with them? Question is, do you plan to be there up until the crack of dawn? If you're going to be there in the crack of dawn, you are now considered the person who's Yoishvim Ba'arei HaPrazoi, and you're obligated to hear it on the 14th. Doesn't matter where your wife is, it doesn't matter how long will you be there that morning.
Why can you hear it there and then hear it?
The question is, are you obligated? You could. Okay. Amar Rava says, Rava, what about a villager?
If you go the next day,
yes.
Are you obligated the next day also?
That's the question here in Achrenim. Let's not get into this right now. If you already heard it on the 14th, you have to hear it again on the 15th. Amar Rava says, Rava, ben kfar shalach le'ir. What about a villager? A villager who we said is allowed to hear it on the 11th, on the 12th, on the 13th. What happens if a villager goes to a city? A villager who goes into an unwalled city has to hear it on the proper day of Purim on the 14th with the other people that live in the unwalled city. My Tama, Haikib Neir Boye Lemikrein. Really, we learned before that a villager has to hear the Megillah on the 14th. Really. Why did they allow him to hear it on the 11th, on the 12th, and on the 13th? They did him a favor. They made it easier for him. Why did they make it easier for him? So like we learned before, but Abanan Huda Kilu Alakfarim, the sages made it easier for villagers. The way we learned before, since they are the ones who provide food and drink for the people who live in the cities, and we made a leniency for them. We like rewarded them. You supply us with water and food, so we'll give you an easier time on Purim. What's that easier time? You don't need to go out of your way to the city. Read it when you're in the city anyway. But if he's in the city on Purim, he's not going out of his way. So he has to hear it on Purim himself. That's only if he's in his place. Avo ki isa be'ir, but if he's anyways in the city, he has to read it like people in the city. Ask the Gemara, Eitzvi Abaya, Abaya quotes a braisa, and the braisa implies otherwise, all right, not like the opinion of Rava. It says in a braisa, ben krach, a person who lives in a walled city that goes to a ir, to a unwalled city. It says, ben kach u ben kach koyre kim koyme. He always reads it the way he reads it in this place. Now the Gemara says, how can the Braisa contradict the Mishnah? Ben Krah, Salka Daitach. Obviously the Braisa has a mistake in it. It doesn't mean a member of a walled city that he always reads it on the 15th. It's not true. Our Mishnah says it depends when he plans to come back. It has to do with when he plans to come back. El Alav, the Mishnah, the Braisa must be a mistake. And you have to amend the braisa, which is something rare. We try not to do that, but we have no other option. And how do we amend it? That the braisa is speaking about a villager, ben kfar. And what does the Mishnah say? That a villager gets to read it like they read it in the villages. This contradicts what the Rava says. Rava says that a villager who is in a city needs to read it the way they read it in the city. So the Gemara says, listen, if you have to already amend the braisa, if it's a mistaken braisa, once you start amending, there's no limit. So amend the law also. Didn't you just amend it? So amend it more. Tana writes that a villager who comes to the city, Koyre Imoim, needs to read it on the 14th like all the other city members. Going on in the Gemara, the Mishnah brought three opinions. That Meir, Halacha, you read the Megillah from the beginning, from Vayhi, Rabbi Yehuda held that you read a Megillah from the words Ish Yehudi, right, which is in the second chapter. And then the Mishnah brought the opinion of Rabbi Yossi, that you read it from the beginning of the third chapter. And now the Gemara says, I'll give you a fourth opinion, Tanya Rashbi. Rabbi Shimon ben Yochai says, you read it from Mibalayla Hahu, from the sixth chapter. And that night that Achashverosh couldn't fall asleep, which is the beginning of the miracle.
What are they arguing about?
Let's see in a moment. That they all base their opinions from the same pasuk, which will also explain what they are arguing about. It says, "Vatichtev Esther Amalke Mordechai Yehudi," that Esther the queen and Mordechai the Jew wrote as called Toikev. Toikev means the whole might, the whole awesomeness. Where did the awesome story start from? Mando Amar Kulam, the one who says that's the halacha, Rabbi Meir, that you have to read it from the beginning. What awesomeness is written in the beginning? The greatness of Achashverosh, that he ruled over the whole world, that he made a party. Talk about Achashverosh. You have to begin with the greatness of Achashverosh. The one who says Ish Yehudi understood that you need to read about the awesomeness of Mordechai. So begin reading from the pasuk Ish, right? Ish Yehudi Hayavishoshanabira. Talk about Mordechai. Man do Amar Machad Varam Eile. The beginning of the third chapter understands that you have to begin reading the awesomeness of the wicked Haman. That's where the miracle began. You have to read the awesome miracle. The miracle began primarily from the time that Achashverosh couldn't fall asleep, and he brought the Sefer HaZichronos. Says the Gemara Rafuna Amar Mahachi. He has another pasuk. It says Uma Ro'u Al Kacha Uma Higia Aleim. What did they see? And look what happened because of what they saw. In other words, that the story of Purim happened by someone seeing something, and therefore something happened. So what is the seeing and what is the happening? Manda Amar Kulam says that we have to read about what Achashverosh saw, and what did Achashverosh see? Maro Achashverosh in Hashemesh Bekelem Shol Beis HaMikdash, Al Kocha Mishum Dechashav Shivim Shinin V'loi Ifroit, that Achashverosh, like we learned a few days ago, he calculated the 70 years in a wrong way. He saw something wrong, which is why he made the party. That's the whole beginning of the story. And what happened at the party? Just like we learned before, Belshazzar used the kelim of the Beis HaMikdash and God killed him. So God wanted to kill who? The royal blood. Achashverosh happened to be of non-royal blood. So therefore God killed Vashti. So we want to read about that which he saw and that which happened because of what he saw.
He didn't equate that.
He made a mistake. Oh, he equated that. He equated 70 years.
No, I'm saying, but he didn't equate the royalty punishment.
No. Correct. In other words, he thought that if anyone would be killed, it would be him, but he wasn't afraid of it. And God killed his wife.
In other words, he thought, oh, it's obviously not true because it's 70 years.
He It's not going to happen anymore. And now I can use the kelim of the Beis Hamikdash. Umagi aleim, and what happened to him? The katol Vashti. The Vashti was killed. By the way, it's not written explicitly in the Megillah that Vashti was killed. People don't chap it. There's no verse that says Vashti was killed. It says v'chamas anol shachacha. Let's go back to Rabbanam and Mishuhudi. Because he killed her, but yeah. The one who says, by the opinion of Rabbi Yehuda, that you have to start reading it from Yishuhudi, that why did Mordechai... Yes. And the second one is Yehudi, Mordechai, because Mordechai saw something. What did Mordechai see? Mordechai saw something that made him choose not to bow down to Haman. Why did he not bow down to Haman? Al-Kacha, what did he saw? The Shavi Nafshi Avodah. He saw that Haman hung on his neck a idol. It's a very important question. Today, can you, out of respect, bow down to a person who's wearing a cross? So they prove from this Gemara that yes. Mordechai went lifnim mishuras hadin and didn't bow down to Haman because he was wearing an avodah zarah on his chest. A cross is an avodah zarah. If halachically you cannot bow down to a person who's wearing a cross, then no one would have been allowed to bow down to Haman. And Mordechai would not be the one like that made a choice, even though it's going to provoke Haman's wrath, he was not allowed to bow down to him. Which proves that halachically you were allowed to bow down to a person who's wearing a cross, because you're not bowing down to the cross, you're bowing down to the person. And when you bow down to a person as a sign of respect, that's okay. People bow down to kings. And until today, in many parts of the world, even commoners, the whole Asia, they meet each other and they give a bow down. And that's tachkat halacha. But Mordechai didn't want to bow down to him. But why? Because he was wearing an avodah zarah, so he decided, I'm not bowing down to him, period. Umay
which I guess is what we said before, because Mordechai didn't want to bow down to him because he was a slave.
Well, he used that to provoke him. In other words, he told Haman that you don't have a power to legislate over me because you're my slave. Let's go back to Umay Gialeim, and what happened? According to this version, the whole miracle happened because of it. No, God made the miracle, not that the decree came because of it. The miracle happened because he didn't bow down to him.
So if the whole thing is that you don't have to bow down to the on your neck, so why did he even bring this up that to work at all? He didn't have to avoid doing it because he saw that.
The opposite. No, he chose to do it. So you have to write that story now. You have to write from Ishihudi, Hamartachai Leichiv Leishtafa, which is a Chiddush. Let's go back to Umando Machdanam Eila. And the third opinion in our Mishnah, the opinion of Rabbi Yosi, Maro Haman Shneskanam Chalai Yehudim. Why did Haman get angry at the Jews? Al Kacha Mishum the Mordechai Yichal Lishtacha, because the Jews didn't bow down to him. Because Mordechai didn't bow down to him. Umay Yelam, and what happened to him? The Tolo Yosi was one of all eight, and he got hung. And now Man the Amar, according to the fourth opinion brought in the Gemara from Nashbi, that you have to start reading the Megillah from Galayla Ahu. Maro Hashverish Lahav Yisever Azachreinoi. You have to start reading from Haman.
No, I know, but I'm saying, what was the greatness there?
The greatness is that he got angry at the Jews because they didn't bow down. That's the narrative has to begin from there. And he got hung on that which he wanted to use for Mordechai. And if you have to start reading from the sixth, why did Ahasuerus ask to bring the Sefer HaZichronos, to bring the book that records the history? Al Kacha Dizimnisa Esther Lohaman Bahadei, because what happened before that? Esther invited Haman to the party she made for Ahasuerus as well. We learned this before last week. From all of the people she invited Haman, why did she invite Haman? It must be because they are conspiring to kill me. And then he began to think, why isn't anyone telling me about their conspiracy? It must be because before, when a conspiracy happened and someone did tell me, I didn't reward them. So now, maybe people know that they are conspiring, but no one wants cares to tell me. So he brought out the same as Achrin, and so Magi Aleim, and what happened because of that, the Sarachash Nisan. Says the Gemara, Amar Abchama, Yomar Abchama, Bar Guri, Yomar Av, Halacha, Kedivrei Ha'emer Kula, the Halacha is you have to read the whole Megillah, and Vafidu, Lamanda, Amram, Ish Yehudi, and even according to the other opinions, starting from the opinion that you have to read it from Ish Yehudi, Tzricha, Shetehei, Ksuva, Kula, the Megillah has to be written from the beginning, from Vayhi B'mei HaChashverish until the end. For Amar Rav Chaldu, Amar Rav Chama, Bar Guri, Amar Rav, Megillah Nikras Sefer, the Megillah sometimes is called a Sefer, Uvi Nikras Igeres, and sometimes it's called a letter, implying different halachas. Nikras Sefer, why is it called a Sefer? Shim Tafra B'chuti Pishtam Psulam. Because if you are going to tie, you're going to connect one parchment with the other, with using threads let's say a flax, that's not kosher. Again, that's one of the halachas. Halacha l'moshe m'sinai, that by a sefer Torah, you can only use sinews, gidim, from a kosher animal. That is the same type of sinews that need to be used in a Megillah, and you can't use any other string. That's not a letter, that's a din of a sefer. That's why it's called a sefer. Why is it called an igeres? Because it's not like a sefer Torah. By a sefer Torah, you have to tie it almost from the top, almost to the bottom. You leave a little bit of space in a sefer Torah on the top. We'll see why. Shouldn't rip. Shouldn't be too tight. But you basically have those sinews tying the parchments together almost in their entirety. By a Megillah, it doesn't have to be that way. If you only put three stitches, it's going to be kosher. As long as they are, you put three stitches equally spaced one from the other. You know what that means, equally spaced one from the other? That would mean that you really have to divide the length of the parchment into four, and you put the first stitch down a fourth, so the space between each stitch is symmetrical, is equal. Amar Rav Yehuda, Amar Shmuel, HaKoyra v'Megillah, HaKsuva, Ben HaKsuva M'liyasa. In those days, it was common for people to write the whole Nach in a sefer, the way we have a sefer Torah. So what would happen if you open up such a large scroll that has all the other Svarim, and you read the Megillah from it, you're not Yoytza. Because you know what it looks like? You're reading Nach. You happen to be reading the Megillah. You have to read it from a scroll that is only a Megillah scroll. Amar Rava says Rava, that Loy Amron, this is only correct, Elav Loy Mechasro Meyatron. That's only if the parchment that was used to write the Megillah has the same size as all the other parchments. So it's one large scroll that has Yeshua, and has Shoiftim, and has Shmuel, and eventually has Esther. But what happens if you have one large scroll, but the parchments that are used to write the Megillah stick out? They are a little bit longer than everyone else, or they're a little bit smaller. When people observe you read a big Sefer of Nach, they see how the Megillah is different. Understand? That's okay. If it's shorter, if the parchments are shorter, if the parchments are bigger, then you could read from it. Now the Gemara continues, Levi bar Shmuel have a kakadi mekamedet of Yehuda b'Megillah Aksuva during the page. No, Bein Aksuvin. He saw him reading from a Megillah that was part of a larger scroll that had in it other Sifrei Kodesh. Amar Lei, so he tells him, Harei Amru, didn't we learn that Akkadah b'Megillah Aksuvin Aksuvin Layasa? Didn't we learn that you're not Yotze? He commented to him and he told him, he corrected him, that you cannot read it from a inclusive Megillah. It has to be a exclusive Megillah. Amar Abchir bar Abba Rabbi Yechanan. No. There the size was the same. Amar Abchir bar Abba Rabbi Yechanan. Akkadah b'Megillah Aksuvin Aksuvin Layasa. He first said that if you write from a Megillah that is part of a larger scroll, you don't fulfill your obligation. But then he took this law and he banged the law on the head. That means that he qualified it to such a degree that he totally changed it. How did he qualify it? That's only if you read it in public. When you read it individually, you are allowed to read it from a Megillah that's written in a larger scroll of Nach. You get that? Because when you're reading it in private, there's no persona nisa. You're reading the Megillah. When did the sages demand for you to read it from an exclusive Megillah only when you're reading it in public? You want people to feel in public, they used to read, we read Haftarah. It's common for us to read in public different parts of Scripture. So the Dafka wanted us to read it from a unique Megillah to make it special. But that's only B'tzibur. So Amar Abchir bar Abba Rabbi Yechanan, Shir Hatfar, Halacha L'meishu M'Sinai, that the type, When you connect the Sefer Torah one to the other, and as I said before, even though that by a Sefer Torah you have to make stitches all the way down the length, which connects one parchment to the other, you leave a little bit on the top, a little bit on the bottom. And that shear is a machal, you have to leave it. So the Gemara says, machal yamoich, and then he qualified it by saying, that it wasn't that God did not allow you to tie from the top until the bottom. It's not like a halacha l'meishu m'Sinai. It's a common sense, practical suggestion in order for you not to rip a sefer Torah when you pick it up. It's interesting. Yeah, it's only a practical thing, and it's only for shelo yikoreya. It's not like a halacha. It's a practical thing. When you tie something from the top to the bottom very tight, if there's pressure, it's going to rip it. But if you leave a little bit, you know, everyone does it, but but
he
didn't say halacha l'mashim esinai. Yeah, no, I'm sorry. No, it's halacha l'mashim esinai, but it's for a practical reason.
Oh, okay.
It's a practical reason, correct. Omer b'chiyah bar Abba.
It's not a...
Ma'akev.
Yeah.
Ma'akev. Omer b'chiyah bar Abba, v'yichne nemol nishtai b'mora, that sh'omad b'moisha, v'yoh kamoli neked machad tzitkis, that if when God put Moshe and he put the Leo inside a cave. And Moshe Rabbeinu, it says that God passed in front of the cave, right? And he couldn't see God's glory inside a cave. And Pashas Kisisa. Then later on we have the same thing with the Leo and Moshe. So in both cases, when Hashem's glory passed the opening of the cave was fully closed. And if there would have been an opening in the cave, even only as the size of Machat Tzidkis, of a needle that you use to sew garments, so the needle hole we know is very small, Moshe Rabbeinu would be unable to survive because of the godly light that would go into the cave. Shemar, as it says, Kiloy Rachni Adam Vachoy. This is all the same Amoira giving the Amar Abchiyam Barabam Rabbeinu. What other things that he said? He said, "My Dechiv Alim Kachol Dvarim Asher Dibur Hashem Imachem Bohar." That on the Luchos, on the second Luchos, God wrote all of the words that he explained to Moshe on the mountain. Lamed, what did God explain to Moshe Rabbeinu? Shehero HaKadosh Baruch Hu Moshe Dikduki Teira. That Hashem explained to Moshe on the Mount Sinai all of the Dikdukim, all of the little nuances. Why is there an extra letter? Why is there even the Kodesh Shal Yud? What does the word S come to add? S Gam. The Dikduki Seifim. And God explained to Moshe Rabbeinu how we learn everything from the Mishnayot. And everything that the Chachamim later will innovate, and what does that include? The Megillah. And we will stop over here. We'll continue Amir Tashem tomorrow.